If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Barely modern witch trials are tragic and spectacular, and also they've presented modernity with a conundrum, which is that back in their time, to those who carried them out, witch hunting made perfect sense. That was because you were fighting a conspiracy by Satan using evil people. But come the 18th century, the educated elites all accepted that magic, as traditionally conceived, doesn't exist. In which case, the witch trials suddenly become an apparently senseless and horrific episode in history.
That was Ronald Hutton discussing the history of witchcraft.
You're listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available in print and several digital formats all over the world. Find out more at historyextra.com/subscribe or look out for us in your digital newsstand or app store.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History Magazine. Today's interview is with Professor Ronald Hutton, a historian and author based at the University of Bristol. Ronald is the author of a new book entitled The Witch, which explores over 2,000 years of witchcraft and the persecutions those accused of being witches had to face. He spoke to our deputy editor, Charlotte Hodgman.
What made you want to write this book? I mean, it's got a huge scope, hasn't it?
It took a quarter of a century. I took up the subject because I have romantic tastes in history. Basically, the stuff in which I work is the stuff which fascinated me when I was an early teenager. And also, the field of witchcraft is a huge developing one in cultural history. There's been an enormous amount of work in the early modern witch trials, but rather less work and tying those up with the ancient world and with the rest of the planet. And I thought I'd carry out an attempt at that work.
So, I mean, the definitions of witch and even magic, I mean, when were these terms first being used? And is there kind of a definition for both of those that, you know, you can use across history?
Academics argue endlessly these days about the definition of magic. The one that I use is a set of techniques employed by human beings in the hope of exploiting superhuman or supernatural power for their own purposes.
So not necessarily for evil or bad?
No, it's completely neutral. And okay. I think most people would accept that quality. As for the definition of witch, there are four circulating in the modern world that have equal validity. Two are really old, two are modern. The two that are old is a witch is somebody who uses magic to hurt people, or else a witch is somebody who uses magic for any purpose,
okay,
good or bad. Some people distinguish white or good witches from evil or black witches if they use the second definition. Third definition is a witch is a woman of independent spirit who is persecuted for it by men in an age of patriarchy. It's a feminist reading. And the fourth is that a witch is a practitioner of a surviving pagan religion.
Okay.
And certainly at the present day, there are perfectly viable religions of pagan witchcraft, which have appeared in the last century.
Okay. So when do we first sort of see that term witch being used to describe people?
Term witch is Anglo-Saxon.
Oh, okay. That early?
Yeah, it appears at the beginning of history among English speakers. And what it means is actually not that clear because all the texts we have are from reforming, belligerent, puritanical churchmen who use the term to demonise all magic. There are hints in the law codes that the term witch did have the sense that it has later among ordinary people of specifically somebody who works harmful magic. But I think we can never be sure.
No. Okay. You mentioned a minute ago about we know quite a lot of studies been done about the early modern witch trials, and that seems to be what when you think of witchcraft, that's what people think about in history. Why do you think that's what people have studied so much? Why have people not sort of looked at witchcraft through history as much as the early modern period?
Well, the early modern witch trials are tragic and spectacular, and they're a phenomenon which covers most of Europe and European colonies and the New World, so they embrace all Europeans. But also they've presented modernity with a conundrum, which is that back in their time, to those who carried them out, witch hunting made perfect sense. And that was because you were fighting a conspiracy by Satan using evil people. But come the 18th century, the educated elites all accepted that magic, as traditionally conceived, doesn't exist. In which case, the witch trials suddenly become an apparently senseless and horrific episode in history. And so they demand explanation for people who are irreligious or from more tolerant kinds of religion or who just want to preserve toleration across the world. They're a stick with which to beat traditional churches and social elites. And to the people who are being beaten, there's an obvious need to find another explanation.
Mm. I mean, have you found anything similar in your studies of sort of global witchcraft, similar to the European, those trials that you mention?
Witch hunting has been found in every single inhabited continent of the world among most of the peoples who've inhabited the earth. Right. But it's not a universal human trait. The largest witch-free area on the planet is Siberia, which covers a third of the Northern Hemisphere.
Okay.
So there are some quite big exceptions. But the majority of human beings have feared magic and have persecuted people they believe to have used it wrongly.
Mm. Okay. So how different is Europe's witchcraft history to that of the rest of the world from what you've been looking at?
Europe looks pretty normal with the rest of the world, except in two respects. The first is the bad news that Europe's the only place which associated witchcraft with a demonic anti-religion, a fully developed religion worshipping the devil, which was pitted against the established religion. And the second is the good news that Europe's the only area on the planet whose peoples have mostly traditionally believed in witchcraft that have lost the belief ceased to believe in it.
So why do you think that's the case?
I think because the early modern witch trials were themselves a short-lived scientific experiment. In other words, until then, people had believed that human beings could work harm by magic, but that didn't result in a great level of prosecution most of the time. But in the 15th century, Christian theologians developed this paranoiac idea of a satanic conspiracy to destroy the human race, using evil people and giving them magical powers through demons. And this caught on, and it was employed as a solution to problems. In other words, if you wiped out the presumed witches in your area, you could stop being unlucky. And it didn't work.
No.
Areas that had massive witch hunts were more traumatised, divided, and in some areas significantly depopulated. And areas that didn't stage witch hunts didn't have those deficiencies, and they had equally good luck, healthy children, healthy livestock, good weather, compared with anybody else. And so it was given up as a bad idea.
Okay, and that's kind of purely a European phenomenon, was it?
Yeah, it goes with a certain cast of scientific thinking, which has been less obvious until European influence spread in the rest of the planet.
So how did witch hunts take place in other places in the world?
Witch hunts globally are pretty much the same thing, and they require two things to kick off. The first is a population that's under economic and social pressure, in which people feel pushed to the margins, so any bit of bad luck is going to destroy their lives. And then when they get the bad luck and the lives are being destroyed, they blame witchcraft. And to pull this together, the second element is witch hunters, experts who claim to be capable of detecting witches and of dealing with them. And when these get their hands on a population that's in a ferment of fear, then the explosion occurs.
Okay. one of probably one of the most well-known witch trials outside of the European ones were the Salem witch trials of 1692. What kind of happened here, and why does this case, do you think, stand out for people so much?
It stands out for people because it's the only big witch hunt in the British colonies in America. And since America is the dominant nation and cultural force in the world today, it has made Salem the most famous witch hunt in the West. It's also extremely well recorded, and it's an intensely dramatic story. It's just made for stage or screen of a divided community in which a group of adolescent women and some adults believe themselves to be bewitched and stirred up by a crazy minister whose career is on the rocks and who wants to salvage it, launch a massive witch hunt. And this spreads until hundreds of people are under suspicion in the area, although the actual death toll is around 20, if you include somebody who was pressed to death for refusing to plead. It's 21.
Has the figure of the witch always been sort of predominantly female? You sort of mentioned about persecution of women.
Well, it depends where you are in Europe. Overwhelmingly, Europeans traditionally associate women with magic, naturally, rather than men. Men are believed to be able to learn magic from books or from teachers, but women just have it in them, which is why women in European culture traditionally feature as prophetesses, as sibyls, as oracles. Mm. They come in when the men can't figure out what's going on. And therefore, if women can just do magic, then they can also work evil magic far more spontaneously than men. And this belief goes right back to the ancient world. But there are areas of Europe, Iceland, Normandy, some of the Austrian lands, where overwhelmingly the people suspected of witchcraft are men. And this is because the ancient traditions in those areas tended to think that men were the more dangerous sex magically.
What about outside of Europe?
Outside of Europe, it's extremely varied. Among the vast number of peoples in the extra-European world who've hunted witches, there is no common pattern. In some areas, women are the suspected group. In others, it's men. In some, it's the old. In some, it's the young. In some, it's the rich. In some, it's the poor.
Okay, so real vary.
Gender is a great variable.
Mm. How did ancient societies view witchcraft and magic, and how did these views sort of change?
It depends on which ancient society you're living. Egypt spectacularly doesn't have a belief in witchcraft and doesn't fear it. Okay. It isn't worried about magic. Across the whole Fertile Crescent from Palestine round to the Persian Gulf, there is an acute fear of witchcraft, and it's associated with an even more acute fear of demons, that's evil spirits in the natural world, and there's a death penalty for witchcraft. In the Greek world, there doesn't seem to be much fear of witchcraft, although magicians occasionally get executed for impiety. The Romans, on the other hand, have a very sharp image of the witch as being an evil woman. And they're also witch hunters on a big scale if we translate their texts properly. And so really what hits medieval and early modern Europe is a combination of Roman culture with Fertile Crescent culture, the demons and the witch figure from there, brought together by the Bible.
Mm. I was going to actually mention about, you know, religion and magic. You mentioned we're kind of quite intrinsically linked, especially in Egyptian society. Was this echoed elsewhere? Did this change? Because later on, religion and magic are kind of at loggerheads. When was this kind of change seen?
It's the ancient Greeks who first make a sharp distinction between religion and magic, at least officially. And this distinction just goes straight into Roman culture, and from Roman culture straight into Christian culture, and from that into a lot of secular modern culture, that basically magic is about human beings working power for their own ends and is impious and antisocial and distinctly dodgy. Mm. And religion is about humans honouring deities and asking them for favours, and that's perfectly okay as long as they're the right kind of deity. Elsewhere in the ancient world, things are a bit different. On the whole, the people of the Fertile Crescent, that's Hebrews, Hittites, Persians, Babylonians, Assyrians, agree with the Greeks and the Romans about this. They hunt witches and they keep religion and magic apart. But the Egyptians don't. They're totally happy to mix the two.
And what sort of impact do you think the church or, you know, religion has had on witchcraft and magic in Europe?
On the whole, the initial effect of Christianity was to damp down witch hunting quite a bit, because with an all-powerful, all-good God who controls the entire cosmos, there's less room, theoretically, for evil to operate without human beings embracing it voluntarily and God licensing it. And so there are whole areas of magic, like a belief in night-flying witches and demonesses working together to persecute humans, on which the church frowns. Also, the early medieval church is very confident because Christianity is spreading so fast. And so they tend to damp down witch hunting and damp down persecution of magicians because they blame the demons instead.
Oh, okay.
And they can take those out. Mm. But the Christian church, especially in the West, loses confidence a lot in the High Middle Ages. Plague reappears. The climate's getting worse. Islam is driving back Christianity from the Holy Land and then through southeastern Europe. And so Christianity gets a lot more edgy and begins to turn upon enemies within. And that's what breeds a totally new and lethal idea of the satanic witch.
And that's when we sort of see the rise in the Middle Ages, the persecution of witches.
Yeah, it begins in the 15th century. It really takes off in the Reformation era.
And why did it kind of then die down? What caused that?
On the whole, witch hunting dies down because it doesn't work, as I've said earlier. And what dies down first is confidence in good evidence. Really, the only sure way in which you can convict somebody of witchcraft is either an entire community lines up against her, or occasionally him, or more often, if the accused can be persuaded to confess. So bullying, browbeating, starving, and above all, direct torture are the ways to produce this. And by the 17th century, a lot of dispassionate people were getting really worried about the implications of torturing people into confession. And when the people didn't need the torture to confess, they seemed often to be patently daft. And so the question arose of how you actually get objective evidence of witchcraft, since you can't actually produce the demons and can't actually objectify the magic. And the answer is you can't. So increasing loss of nerve about convicting people preceded a general loss of belief in magic.
OK. I mean, particularly in the early modern witch trials, some of the accounts and the confessions given by the accused are quite sort of fantastical and elaborate, you know, confessing to sort of consorting with demons and familiars and things like that. Aside from torture, why would somebody confess to that type of thing, do you think?
Across most of the areas of the major witch hunts, torture in one form or another is really important. You can't leave it out. So without the torture, we're dealing with a minority of cases. And about those, we can only speculate. Stockholm syndrome, when the accused take on the thought world of their captors. False memory syndrome, which has been proved in modern times, straightforward insanity, a belief in dreams. A lot of people at this period can't distinguish dreams from reality. So if you dream vividly, you've gone to a witch's sabbat. If you can believe your spirit's gone forth while your body lies sleeping in bed, then you're there. Mm. So there's a whole range of possibilities.
Your book doesn't just focus on witches. You also look at ghosts, fairies, Satanism, quite a broad range of topics. Is there a link between these topics and witchcraft history?
Well, there is. I don't do much on ghosts. I have a chapter on fairies because in certain parts of Europe, mostly on the fringe, including Britain, fairies are very important in magic. A lot of magicians who offer their services for money in medieval, early modern Europe claim to have learned their skills from the fairies. It's a very good way of avoiding questions as to where you get your knowledge. And these sometimes get mixed up in witch trials spectacularly, especially in Scotland. And so there is a direct relationship there.
And you mentioned that Britain in particular has quite a strong folklore history. But there's sort of certain areas, aren't there, that have a stronger history. Why do you think certain areas kind of focused on the, on this type of thing more than others?
Different areas have different folklore traditions, and some are more friendly to witchcraft trials than others. Take fairies, for example. Fairies happen in three zones across Britain. In the southeast and around cities, they're not very important. They're small, they're mischievous, but they're really not a big issue. Across the middle zone, which is Wales, the southwest, northern Britain, southern Scotland, fairies are bigger and fiercer, and they have to be reckoned with. But if you propitiate them and do the right things and stay out of the more dangerous natural places, you're probably okay. But across the Gaelic world, Highlands and Islands, Scotland, Man and Isle of Man and Ireland, they're much bigger. They're much more dangerous. In fact, in those areas, they largely take over the role of witches in being the magical danger to humans.
Why do you think there's still so much fear around witchcraft and magic? Do you think this sort of attitude will ever change?
I think the attitude is changing. I mean, it's changed an enormous amount since the early modern period, which is why we don't have witch hunts anymore and why witchcraft is not a crime across most of the West. But I'd like to see it go altogether. The hangover in the West is due to the fact that people still suffer fortune or misfortune that they feel is uncanny. And there is an ancestral tendency to seek a magical explanation or a supernatural explanation. Also, people are often still devoutly religious, and witchcraft is in the Bible.
Yes.
So you actually need to be able to talk yourself out of that and talk round it to be a witch-free Christian, which can be done, but it takes a bit of thought. And finally, there's this massive post-Christian, post-early modern hangover in society among many people who no longer have religious beliefs but still have this vague, formless fear of magic.
Mm. I mean, and that fear seems to have been present for, you know, throughout history. But was there ever a time when perhaps, you know, being accused, being thought of being a witch was actually a positive thing and witches were celebrated?
Well, there never was a time anywhere in which people who use magic to hurt their neighbours or anybody else were celebrated. They're criminals, like murderers, thieves and rapists. But if you define witch in the other big traditional sense as anybody who works magic, then anybody who works magic to help people, if only for a price, tends, if they appear to be successful, to be respected and much demanded figures in their communities. I tend not to use the word witch for these characters, not because I have any deep-rooted hostility towards the idea, but to distinguish them is helpful because they're kind of opposites to each other. The witches who are believed to work bad magic are identified and hunted by the magicians who work good magic. So these helpful magicians, if you're a client, who are often called cunning folk or wise folk in English, I call service magicians, because that really stresses their role.
And people really saw that distinction, did they?
Oh, people saw them as polar opposites.
Right.
There's occasionally an overlap when a service magician is regarded as going to the bad or dabbling in destructive magic for a price, as well as good magic.
I mean, presumably, you know, being that sort of cunning person, you were sort of leaving yourself open to, you know, if something went wrong later on in that person's life that you provided a service for, you could then be blamed.
That is quite true. And what looks on present evidence like a small minority of the people executed in witch trials were failed service magicians.
Okay.
But only a small minority. What it seems definitely didn't happen was that the witch hunts rounded up the service magicians. Most service magicians seem to have done pretty well out of witch hunting by identifying witches.
What always kind of fascinates me is how, you know, neighbours who've lived next door to each other for years and years and families that have known each other can suddenly turn and be absolutely convinced that person, that lady living next door, is a witch and has you know, caused them some ill. Why do you think people were sort of almost so ready to do that? Well, did they just get caught up in the whole kind of witch craze?
Traditional communities are riven by latent divisions and tensions, which normally they can contain. But when circumstances change, they erupt lethally. Just look at Rwanda or look at what happened in Bosnia. And the parallel pattern when you're speaking of witchcraft is in societies that deeply believe in magic, there are always going to be people who think they're bewitched. And normally they'll counter it by household magic of their own or hiring a service magician. But if there is a mood abroad that witches should be rooted out finally, they'll take that option.
What sort of role has the crown had?
Across most of the world, and certainly across Britain, rulers tend to stay out of witch hunts, unless they're rulers of very small territories, like many of those in Germany, where they're caught up in a local panic. But there are exceptions. Here and there in history, a monarch or a chief uses the fear of witches to enhance his own power. And James VI of Scotland is the outstanding example in Britain, although later, when he was ruling England as well, he became notably sceptical about witch accusations. He's like a pendulum on the matter. But Shaka, or Ushaka, the great founder of the Zulu kingdom, was a notable witch hunter. Manuelito, who's a Native American chief in the southwest, is another. Handsome Lake, an Iroquois Seneca chief in the northeast, are people who found their power on witch hunting.
Okay, so it could benefit you.
It could benefit you, definitely, if you harness that fear and used it to get extra power for yourself.
Okay. You've mentioned that sources for the early modern period, and you mentioned Salem, are quite plentiful. But presumably sources for earlier periods are probably a lot scarcer. How have you sort of gone about, has it been hard to kind of do the research, especially for the global aspect of your book?
The global aspect is not a problem for material because it depends on histories written by 19th, early 20th century European visitors and invaders in the developing world, and the growing and now enormous number of anthropological studies made of traditional peoples with a view to looking at witchcraft. As for early Europe, the ancient evidence is all legal codes and, in the Greek and Roman case, literary texts as well. So we get snapshots of what the elite think and want done, but not a lot more. For the Middle Ages, there are legal records in patches from the 12th century onwards. And earlier than that, we're not supposed to have much, but oh boy, believe me, there's an enormous amount of writing left by churchmen. Okay. Anybody who's waded through the successive volumes of Patrologia Latinae or the monumental history of Germany will know quite how much there is.
And finally, do you think we've discovered everything there is to know about witchcraft for history? Do you think there's still a lot more to find out?
I think that in whole areas of Europe and in whole areas of history, the work has only just begun.
That was Professor Ronald Hutton. The Witch, A History of Fear from Ancient Times to the Present, is out now in the UK, published by Yale. And in the US, it's due to be released next month by the same publisher. Meanwhile, you can read a written version of this interview in the August edition of BBC History magazine, which is still on sale for a few more days. Also in this month's issue, we have pieces on the Battle of Passchendaele, a Victorian murder scandal, and the partition of India, among other things. You can get hold of our August issue now in all good newsagents and on the iPad, Kindle, and many other digital devices.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We don't always realize just how much our negative thoughts and experiences stick with us and weigh us down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mum does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger. Talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/historyextra today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/historyextra.
Now, before we go, don't forget that tickets for our live events at Winchester and York are currently on sale. The weekends take place from the 6th to 8th of October and the 24th to 26th of November. And talks are now beginning to sell out. Head to historyweekend.com for more details and to purchase tickets. Well, that's about it for today, but please do join us again on Thursday when we'll be talking to Stuart McConey about the Jarrow March of 1936.
Thanks for listening to this History Extra podcast, which was produced by Jack Fletcher. Do let us know what you think about this episode by emailing podcast@historyextra.com, and we might read out your messages in future editions. Alternatively, why not keep in touch via Twitter or Facebook, where you'll find us at History Extra. For more great history content, don't forget to visit our website, historyextra.com, which is full of history articles, quizzes, image galleries, and more. Plus, it's where you can download hundreds of previous episodes of this podcast.